The public hearing on the 2013 amended budget will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Belcher?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
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 Mr. Black. Here. The 2013 amended budget in tentative form was made available on April 9, 2013, and notice of its availability and of this evening's public hearing was published on April 11, 2013 in Gatehouse Media, Suburban Newspaper, doing business as Suburban Life Publications, a newspaper of general circulation in DuPage County covering the communities of Glen Ellen, Wheaton, Carroll Stream, Lombard, Glendale Heights, and Glendale Heights. The board will take action on the 2013 amended budget during its regularly scheduled meeting, which will follow this hearing. To date, we have not received any comments regarding the 2013 amended budget. Are there any members of the public who wish to provide testimony tonight? Hearing none, the public hearing is now closed. We'll proceed to the regular meeting immediately. May 13, 2013. The time is now
17.
Seeing a quorum of the Board of District 41, the regular meeting of the Board of Education will now come to order. Mr. Kenwood, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Flag is back there. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mr. Kenwood?
Here.
Mr. Alger?
Here.
Mr. Kennedy?
Here.
Mr. Benson?
Here.
Mr. Ellis?
Here.
Mr. Escalante?
Here.
Mr. Black?
Here. Presentations, reports, and initiative updates.
I think we're going to put public participation second, so we can allow the Ben Franklin students to give us their presentation first. Then we'll go to public participation, and then we'll come back for our PE and parent-teacher advisory report, if that's okay with the audience. So we're going to begin this evening with Ben Franklin's presentation, and I'll introduce Mr. Kirk Samples, principal of Ben Franklin, and he will introduce the various student presenters and teachers.
I'd like to welcome everybody for coming to Ben Franklin tonight. Thank the Board of Education for coming and spending some time with us tonight. We're going to take you to school a little bit on something that we've been talking about at Franklin School for a couple of years now, and this is problem-based learning and also 21st century learning at our school. So just to give you a little bit of a definition, problem or project, those words are used kind of interchangeably. Based learning, a definition for that is as follows: an instructional approach built on authentic learning activities and engaged student interest. These activities are designed to answer a question or solve a problem, generally reflect types of learning and work people do in the everyday world outside the classroom. So we strive to be authentic with it. Problem-based learning also allows students to reflect upon their own ideas and opinions, exercise voice and choice, and I think that's a really important part of problem-based learning, and make decisions that affect project outcomes in the learning process in general. It also teaches students 21st century skills as well as content, including communication, presentation, organization, and time management, research and inquiry, all things that we're really striving to do with the Common Core. Just a quick visual to talk about something we've also been talking about at Franklin School, are the four C's of 21st century learning. And that's communication, how to share our thoughts, our questions, our ideas, collaboration, working together, critical thinking, looking at problems in a new way, and also tying things together for students. And then also creativity, trying new approaches to getting things done, and innovation. I just included a quick snapshot of the long-range plan, our board's long-range plan for the 21st century. And the things that we're working on here that we're talking about tonight apply to goal one, where students will be able to demonstrate knowledge, expertise, learner characteristics necessary for 21st century learners, which include critical thinking, problem solving, communication, and collaboration skills. And then also some down here, I think, is a strong connection with, and as you'll see by some of the examples that we're going to show you tonight, 21st century learning through technology. We're going to talk a little bit about that there's more than one way to publish it, not just pencil and paper, but there's a lot of different media and a lot of different ways that students can publish and have an authentic audience for their work.
Daddy
class
was a whole lot of fun in first grade.
Got to stop for a second. I don't know if our first grade teachers in here would like to quickly address.
I'm Mary Elsie. This is my teammate Susan Saylor, and we integrated a project-based learning into our plant science unit. We'll let the kids in the picture speak for themselves.
All right. And as we clicked, I did want to mention quickly too that we knew that we wanted this to be the topic for our presentation this evening, and I sent an all call out to the staff. And every grade level responded that they had things that they wanted to show and to bring tonight. And in the spirit of inclusiveness, we do have a number of things to show you, but I think it also speaks to the fact that problem-based learning also engages teachers. They're very interested and excited by the things that we're demonstrating here.
Studying plants was a whole lot of fun in first grade. As part of our science curriculum, our students learned about life cycles. In the fall, first graders studied about animal life cycles. Each child picked an animal to research and report to their classmates. In the winter, they studied the water cycle and weather. Students researched and created weather posters. They were ready to go when we began our science unit on the cycle of a plant. At first, the kids learned about the four basic needs. We call them variables, of plants, trees, and flowers. Let's hear from some of our students. Studying plants was a whole lot of fun. We did studies by today, or I will tell guys you knew that it required soil, water, air, and H2O. Every day we gave our plants squirts of water, we recorded our observations, and soon our seeds spread it. At the same time, there were things starting to grow in our courtyard. This allowed us to take our studies outside and some math and into our mornings. Our class divided into teams. Each team had a project. Our observations lasted about 6 weeks. Each Thursday, we were curious and excited to go see what had happened. Usually, we recorded weights and would peek outside the window. Sometimes it was raining, but we got to see our plants change from little green sprouts to flowers, to big green plants, to big green plants. It was very exciting. By now, first graders had first-hand knowledge of the needs of a plant. They were ready for a project. The PBL question, what if I changed one of the variables of the needs of a plant? Each student decided which variable they would change and formed a hypothesis. We kept a control plant in soil that continued to receive water, sun, and air. The kids each planted their own marigold, implementing their own unique change, and watched to see what would happen. Throughout the project, the students observed and recorded their findings. Our class uses Adria to choose which plant variable we wanted to change, air, sunlight, water, or soil. We learned that we had to keep the other three variables the same. We collaborated in small groups to brainstorm things we could do to test our ideas. Then we predicted what we thought might happen. My group decided to test what would happen to my plant if it didn't get air. We talked about how to get the sun and water and still keep out air. Some ways we did this were with boxes, with clear cups taped together, and plastic bags. I discovered that my plant watered itself. Some plants still grew and others died out. Our group wanted to see what was happening to our plants of being used, liquid and juice, soil, and gatorade instead of water. Some plants still grew, but the soil got mold on it. I think this came from the sugary drinks. One boy did not give his plant any liquid, and it shriveled up. I wanted to see if a plant could grow without sun. I covered my plant with two cups that light could not get through. Other kids put plants in cabinets, boxes, or built Legos around them. Most of our plants started to dry out and wilt. One surprise was that plant in the cabinet looked the same. What if we didn't plant our flower in soil? Some kids use grass, cheese, cream, wood chips, pasta, tofu, and turtles to start soil. We put our plants in the sun. We got air and we watered them. Most of the flowers shriveled up and the leaves look. One boy discovered that his plant grew in grass because there were some nutrients in the cup. In conclusion, we all learned from our project based learning. It encompassed learner characteristics that we strive for in our classrooms. Our students were curious and engaged. They collaborated with their classmates and were respectful of our environment. It was a creative approach to our learning. The first grade team looks forward to more project-based learning.
Mrs. Elstein, Mrs. Shea, their cast of the plant project you saw. Our next group, second grade teachers, were here to talk a little bit about a communities project that they did. We have a YouTube on this, but
we're
going to
do that right after I speak.
Okay.
So we can go right into it. I'm Joan Doyle, and my team members are Patty Gill, Debbie Bray, and Lisa Moon. In social studies, we learn about communities, and we studied about urban, suburban, and rural communities. So our project-based learning was, what community would you like to live in and why? So as children picked their communities and created 3D communities with that. They worked in small groups with each other. And then after that, the children wrote about their communities and created a photo story, which is a technology software, where they showcased what they did and why they chose these different communities. A culmination of our PBL was when we took each of these projects, we went to the multi-purpose room, and we set it up in a horseshoe kind of way, where we had the city kind of crowded together, and then the suburbs coming around spread out a little bit more, and then the rural showing all the different lands to give them a visual of how that looked. And then the children watched the photo story of all the different projects. So today I bring to you just a little bit of a photo story of a rural community, and then you'll see an interview with one of our second graders after the PBL.
There are 10 animals. The animals eat their hay. They drink. On our farm, we have corn and a silo. I mean, what sort of rural community doesn't have corn? So we can harvest it and sell it at the farmer's market. We have it fenced up so no one can steal corn. The silo is there so we can store the food in there. That's where we have a silo. Do you see that thing on the fence? That thing on the fence is a caterpillar. All I have to say left is the end. Farmers live on their farms. We love the farms. I really learned that, like, you can do, like, how much
fun it is, and like how quicker you do it by like working with a group, because like when you're with a group, and you do more stuff faster, and you can do lots of stuff. And it's really fun when you're working with a group because you can be with people that you know and people that you don't know. And the other thing is that you can also make new friends with other people. So that's, and I also learned a lot about urban, suburban, and rural communities. And it was a very fun project.
The example that we have here tonight, I think Katie Hardesty is actually here to talk to us a little bit about that. I can kind of go through and tell you what the teachers had put together in terms of a description of this. The challenge was to build an arcade game using only cardboard and everyday items, and it was inspired by, there's actually a YouTube video out that has kind of gone viral by this point, but so about a boy named Kane who creates an entire arcade out of cardboard. So before building the class has used engineering skills in making a design and then built and listed materials and sized their projects. They focused on our learner characteristics while designing. During this unit, they had parent entrepreneurs from their parents, actually. Several of our parents at Ben Franklin came and presented experiences of what it's like to be an entrepreneur. Students presented their arcade games to younger students, and final presentation was the parents and the public. We had a kind of a sellout demonstration in the multi-purpose room. So, Katie, I don't know if you have more to add.
Hi, my name is Katie Hardesty, and I'm a third grader at Ben Franklin Elementary School. This year, all of the third graders made a cardboard arcade. It was inspired by a little boy named Kane, who used his imagination to make his own arcade made out of cardboard. The video about Kane's arcade became a big success on the internet and has inspired many people to use their creativity and imagination. Here's an example from one of my fellow students. We had a great time making these, and the parents came into school to play our games. They loved them.
There's another picture of some of our arcade builders in fourth grade. All right, our fourth grade team with some student presenters is coming up here.
Sarah Rodriguez, and I'm a fourth grade teacher here at Franklin, and Jane Filmer and Wayne Wittenberg are in the back, and Mr. Shrimp is also on our team. And this summer, we attended the district offering of a PBL training, and we had a whole week to work on PBLs together and what we wanted to do for this year. The interesting thing about PBLs is that you can't really plan the whole thing, because the kids are supposed to come up with problems, come up with solutions, and lead the way. So what we did is look at the science and the literacy standards and put together ideas we thought might make a good problem for them to solve, and then decided that we'd use our life cycle unit to lead the way. And our kids are going to present you our Emerald Ash Borer PBL, and kind of was sparked by them, and we had a nice culminating project at the end.
Great. Hi, my name is Grant Williams. Well, G. Willie. I'm a student of Mr. Shrimp's class. This year, I participated in a problem-based learning class. What that means is, in fourth grade, we try to solve a real-life problem through research, experiment, debate, collaboration, and good old-fashioned hard work. However, before we can dive into solving a problem, we need some background information on our topic. For we can't solve a problem we know nothing about. What we do is pretty nifty. We switched science teachers for a week at a time. That meant I was able to learn about life cycles from Mr. Shrimp, the anatomy of a tree from Mr. Rodriguez, about invasive species and adaptations from Mrs. Filmer, and a crash course in the Emerald Ash Borer and ashtrays from Mr. Whitford. All in this life was in an efficient and fun way to learn necessary information before we tackle our massive project.
Let me finish our research. We have the two groups of how we wanted to present the ashtray and the information.
Groups created PowerPoints, iMovies, blogs, posters, and brochures.
It was nice to do something you wanted to do and what you're good at.
When we presented, parents and guests came to our classroom. They were able to walk around and choose what presentation format they wanted to watch. Some even left with a flyer or could find the blog on our website.
Wanted to contribute money to help replace some of the lost trees due to the Emerald Ash Borer.
We made these rubber band bracelets from Rainbow Loom, supplied by the Alumni Express and Baker Health.
Students in all four classrooms worked at lunch and home making the bracelets. We sold them for $1 a piece at a fourth grade open house.
At the end of the evening, we raised $421.
Once we raised the funds,
my name is Leah Morrow.
Once we raised the funds, we had to decide what to do with them. We contacted the village of Glen Ellen, and they said there are a couple of ways we could make a donation to the EAB program.
The fourth grade classes decided they would like to replace trees that had been removed because of EAB. We were able to share the cost of replacing three trees on Glen Ellen subways.
My name is Gwen Hardesty, and I'll be talking about how it helped be at the Glen Ellen board meeting.
When we made the donation, the village board invited us to attend the village board meeting and to be honored there for making our donation. They awarded us with this certificate. This made me feel good that they acknowledged our hard work, and it is good to experience and learn about some of the other problems in Glen Ellen.
My name is Jack McGurk, and EAB is still a big problem in Glen Ellen. The goal of our project was to make the community aware of the problem. Please take one of our student newsletters about EAB to become informed. And remember, if you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem.
And we have a fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Thomas, is going to talk to us a little bit about some of the STEM learning that they've done this year in fifth grade.
That's a hard
group
to follow. In fifth grade, there's Mrs. Millay, Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Palach and myself, and we've kind of looked at being a PBL all year long, and whenever we could possibly, whenever it came up in conversation, we would just go and follow that. Like she said, a lot of problems come up during the year, and these are just some of the problems that we came up with. At the beginning of the year, we started out with, because one of the moms has a child in diapers, it's like what diaper brand performs the best, and so we researched that, we tried them all out, and found out that there was one from Trader Joe's that is actually made out of wood pulp, and it has cedar chips in it for the smell. And it was fairly absorbent, which was rather interesting. Then we followed that. That sparked the students into wanting to investigate things of their own, and so then we had a science fair where our basic thing was that you had to have something that was testable. And so they all designed their own science projects, and the entire fifth grade class had science fair. A fourth grade participated in that, and there was also PTA had a speaker come in, not a speaker, but a demonstrator of, you know, doing all kinds of science demonstrations. Then we moved on to our engineering of weather instruments, and their problem was that they had to design four weather instruments that actually worked, use those weather instruments to take a bunch of data, and then forecast a weather plan. Some of the instruments are behind you there, and we had a various array of things, anywhere from I go. In the beginning, they started out really simple. We had a cup with a pencil through it stuck in the ground, and then they realized that the water leaked out, so it didn't work very well. And so there were a lot of, I think every single one that we designed, they had to do schematics and the whole nine yards on it, but everything that they designed pretty much had a flaw in it, didn't work. But they had to keep working at them until they actually had working four working instruments, and so we could do the project. And these are just a couple of samples, and then the one with the white one, they want to actually market it. So it's kind of interesting. Then we moved on. Oh, and the last one there, there's a little picture on the screen there. We found that the kids just became so engaged in any kind of problem that you would bring up that my student teacher and I, one day at lunch, we sat and we built that. And then our charge was how many cubic units is in there. And the kids actually, like, dove in, wanted to do this because their mindset is to a different place than it was at the beginning of the year. And they actually came within one block of figuring it out. And there were 8,900 some blocks in there. So it's been a really interesting year where they started out not wanting us to answer the questions, wanting parents to answer the questions, and now they want to answer the questions. So.
In our quest this year to learn more about PBL as a staff, well, actually starting last year, Lucy Dahlman actually identified a really good book that we could start this process. And she led us through a book study last spring in that. And that kind of spurred a lot of interest by the staff. And we had almost every classroom teacher at Franklin participate in a week-long, an optional week-long in-service over at Hadley. To learn more about problem-based learning. And so this is something we've been working at quite a bit, but Mrs. Shea came up with an idea that why don't we do a staff PBL? Why don't we do something as a staff that would kind of get us thinking in this way as well? And so that's something that she had come up with, and she's going to talk briefly about this.
I'm Mrs. Shea. I'm the ESL teacher here at the school. And when we were looking at our parent surveys and feeling, we noticed that even though we have high parent engagement at our school, we had a group of parents that really wasn't connecting the way we would like them to. Because we know that the research says that the more engaged families are with the school, the better the student will do. So rather than just have two or three people try to figure out what to do, because it's kind of a complicated, complex problem, we had the idea of presenting it to our staff as a PBL. And Kirk made a nice slideshow that got people really interested in it and presented it at a staff meeting. And then we have 20 staff members in our PBL group. And it's a really nice cross-section of classroom teachers, specialists, professionals. The school psychologist is there, the social worker, and Kirk. And so we made some essential questions. We came up with questions that we had. We form study teams, and we meet once or twice a month. We report back to each other, and so we've identified different things that we want to put into place next year to really engage our families, to let them know that they're important to us, that their students are important to us, and so we're really going to roll out the red carpet at our meet and greet, and we're also going to focus on curriculum night and our conferences and our open house, and then once we build a relationship with our families, then we're going to take it to the next level of how can we engage our parents with their students' academic life at school. So first thing is to engage with them, but then also to educate them. And we'll keep you posted on how that goes. That's for next year.
That's pretty much our presentation. We have one last little, very short thing that this was actually an extension of the science work that's been going on in fifth grade. And I think Teresa, working with some of the students in one of our fifth grade classrooms, they came up, they used the software iMovie and came up with a trailer, iMovie trailer. We have for you Making It Rain. Thank you. because we've been learning more about PBL and 21st century learning at Franklin School. I don't know if there are any questions at this time.
Questions or comments?
I just want to make a really quick comment. One of the first of all, thanks to all the students who came here tonight and the parents and the teachers that are here tonight. This is you did a great job, and we thank you for giving your time to prepare and do that. And this is really a highlight, I think, for the board when we get to go out to the schools and see in place the activity and the learning and the energy and the commitment, which is significant in this district. Last week was Teacher Appreciation Week, and I was listening to an interview with Vivian Paley, who some teachers might know. She's a teacher at the University of Chicago Lab School. And she did an experiment a few years ago in her classroom where she set up a rule, and the rule was very simple. She said, you can't say that you can't play. So she told her children that in the classroom, if someone wanted to come and join your group, you needed to let them. You couldn't say that they couldn't play with you. And in one of the videos, the little boy that talked about the learning and being a part of a group and learning with kids that he knew, but also kids that he didn't know, sparked that for me. And I think one of the biggest takeaways over the last couple of years with problem-based learning has been the amount of activity and integration of the children with each other. Certainly with the faculty and the paraprofessionals and the staff, but with each other, which is, if we can hold on to that getting into middle school and high school, then we have laid an incredible foundation. So really interesting book, too. Excellent.
I just want to compliment the teachers because you asked for comments.
Sorry, board member comments or questions.
Yeah. I was just going to tell the teachers.
I think the teachers did a great job. I am a little concerned about one of the classrooms that had a Green Bay Packers theme that I thought was a little inappropriate for the kids at this age level. I also noticed some of the 7th and 8th graders here from Hadley were laughing, and you know, guys, 4 years ago, that was you.
They're like, you can see that there's a caterpillar.
I did. It's nice to see, you know, the focus on the learner characteristics. I know a lot of times we talk about the Common Core and the fact that the teachers were able to take that and the learner characteristics and turn them into something that was exciting and, quite frankly, kind of entertaining. To help, you know, engage our children in education. I did have a question, though. I noticed you were touting the 4 C's, collaboration, critical thinking. I forget what the other two are. But those 4 C's, those are some of our learner characteristics, and I'm just wondering why the 4 C's versus the learner characteristics, or is that specific to this initiative? Or
It's just the way... I think in the literature that's out there right now, and there's actually a group, and I'm not sure what the affiliation or how they're tied together, but it's all about 21st century learning skills, and that's kind of the way that they've put it together and marketed it in kind of a way that is easy to remember and so forth. But so we've talked about it in that way a little bit this year, but also talked a lot about it in terms of the district learner characteristics.
And is that specific to Ben Franklin, or is the 4 C's?
So 4 C's is a pretty, as Kirk said, I think it's associated with the P21 framework, which is the 21st Century Learning Consortium. And it encompasses maybe not all of our learner characteristics, because we certainly have more than what's encompassed in the 4 C's, but the 4 C's also go beyond just the words of collaboration, curiosity, creativity, and critical thinking.
Critical thinking. Yeah. All right.
So
great
job. Talked about it quite a bit as we were talking in our think tank meetings, too. Is that progressed?
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I'd just like to say thanks again to Kirk, and thanks again to his staff, and especially the students for standing up in front of all of us and doing a great job.
This evening, and we know that students may. We still have. I mean, we've got plenty of junior high students that are here and are looking to speaking next. But I know if you need to get your children home and your families, you are free to leave at this time or at any point throughout the board meeting. Okay, rather than go on to our next presentations, PE and PTEC, thank you for being patient. We are going to go to public participation.
Is there any member of the public who wish to address the board at this time? Any hands? Okay. I'd like to remind everyone that this is a business meeting, so there will not be a give and take between the board and members of the public. I'd also remind those who wish to speak that there is a three-minute time limit. And I think the way I want to do it is if we get to the one-minute mark, if you see me, I'll do this. And if you don't see me, I'll gently remind you. And at the end of the three-minute time, I will also remind you. So, Mrs. Tucker, first person, please.
I might be 3 minutes, 10 seconds.
Okay.
So, my name is Tracy Clapp, and I live on Hill Avenue in Glen Ellen, and I'm here this evening to encourage the board to remove the ban of the book purse being a wallflower from Hadley. I became aware of the ban through my daughter, who is an eighth grader at Hadley. We were both present at the last special meeting where our students, faculty, and parents voiced their opinions in favor of the same. To allow the book to be read at Hadley is free choice. To learn more about the issue, I read the book and listened to the recorded meeting of 4:29. During the board's discussion, what troubled me was that the three male board members began their discussion by saying how censorship was a sensitive topic in our country and the world, and they are generally not in favor of it, yet they went on to contradict themselves merely minutes later, voting on a serious topic with limited knowledge. It seems they erred on the side of a few sets of parents due to their emotional plea and a few book excerpts, and not on the thoughtful research recommendation of the reconsideration committee that was comprised of several District 41 teachers, administrators, and a Hadley parent. It is very perplexing that the reconsideration committee's recommendation was seemingly so quickly dismissed by four board members. The collective experience of the reconsideration committee is impressive. The teachers especially spend numerous hours with approximately 100 students per year, and these teachers have multiple years of experience, so I think we can trust their perspective. They know better than any single family what our kids are dealing with, plus they are professionally trained, so they provide an informed perspective. To provide the board further data, I searched the internet for information of the banning of the perks of being a wallflower in the U.S., and while it has been banned from one school in Portage, Indiana, I could find no evidence of the book being banned in an entire state or states plural, as communicated by Mr. Bradfield, so that was misinformation he provided. What I also found was that as often as the book has been challenged, it has been retained as optional reading. Also, since the board did not know if the Glen Ellen Library carried the book, I would inform everyone that it does have six copies, and they are shelved upstairs in the young adult teen room area, and all copies are currently checked out. So instead of banning the book, perhaps a more appropriate action would be for the Bradfield family to instruct their children to share their reading choices with them for approval, instead of imposing this restriction for all of the students at Hadley. This book serves a purpose for some, as we learned last week. I'd like to think of Glen Ellen as a progressive, educated community and not a restrictive community with a narrow lens. And so in the future, if the board is considering banning a book, there should be some process in place whereby each board member must read the book they are considering banning and inform the public via email or voicemail blast that this issue has been raised, so that a broader audience can weigh in before any decision is made, or better yet, make it a policy that we don't ban books in this community. At the special meeting on 5-6, board member Steve Vondrak admitted that he didn't really understand what he was voting on. He stated that he thought he was voting for a better process of informing parents of book choice, not the banning of a book. So with that, the board's vote would have likely been a tie situation, and this leaves me wondering if the other board members fully understood that they were about to ban a book from Hadley. So as I see it, the adults have a unique opportunity here to teach our students a valuable lesson.
It's time. Could you please sum up?
Yep. Some adults don't always get it right the first time, so it is okay to say you got it wrong and work to make it right. Thank you for allowing me to share my point of view.
Thank you.
Students that have spoken out against the banning of the book, Perks of Being a Wallflower, we respectfully ask you to give us your decision before we graduate at Hadley at the end of this month. We would all like to leave with the reassurance that our hard work has made an impact, some sign that our voice has been heard. We would like to give future 8th graders the chance to read this life-changing book, the opportunity to find comfort in something they can keep coming back to for years to come. If we have learned anything at Hadley, it is that our voice is important and we should stand up for what we believe in. This year we were introduced to 21st Century Learner Program, and we have taken the opportunity to put those expectations and values into action. We are living the program that District 41 has placed before us, the think tank that we have created, and we hope that this will be taken into account. We would appreciate the decision by the end of this month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Nicole Clapp, and I'm an eighth grader at Hadley. I am speaking because I would like to echo my friend and classmate, Olivia. I would really like an answer by the end of the month regarding the banning of the perks of being a wallflower. I want to leave Hadley knowing that I can make a difference by having my voice heard by the community and the board. I feel that it is what my school wants for me and has taught me how to do. And now I'm speaking on behalf of Mindy Hacker. Okay, so I am an avid reader, as is my sixth grade daughter. I believe that it is up to the parent to decide what is appropriate for their particular child. When my daughter asked to read this book, or at least see the movie in her words, I did some research and felt that it was in fact inappropriate for her. I do not believe in censorship. I feel that when the Board of Education decides what is appropriate, we go down slippery slope. In addition, banning a book only adds more publicity to a book and makes it more enticing. We are a country that cherishes our freedoms, and freedom of speech is among those.
Thank you.
Kelly Coleman. My name is Kelly Coleman, and I'm a seventh grade literacy teacher in Hadley. I'd like to highlight or paraphrase some excerpts from the American Library Association's Freedom to Read statement. And as a literacy teacher and soon to be a Norris School Library Media Specialist, I stand behind these viewpoints. It's the ALA's position that when private or public figures seek to censor materials in schools or put labels on so-called controversial or objectionable materials, it is as though they feel suppression is needed to keep our children safe and to ensure their morals are not corrupted. The ALA believes that most attempts at suppression rest on a denial of the fundamental premise of our democracy, that the ordinary individual, by exercising critical judgment, will select the good and reject the bad. Therefore, the ALA affirms the following proposition. It is in the public interest for publishers and librarians to make available the widest diversity of views and expressions, including those that are unorthodox, unpopular, or considered dangerous by the majority. Librarians do not need to endorse every idea or presentation we make available. It would conflict with the public interest for them to establish their own political, moral, or aesthetic views as a standard for determining what should be published or circulated. And it is not in the public interest to force a reader to accept the prejudgment of a label characterizing any expression or its author as subversive or dangerous. Therefore, the ALA opposes labeling as a means of predisposing people's attitudes toward library materials. Prejudicial labels are designed to restrict access based on a value judgment that the content, language, or themes of the material render it inappropriate or offensive for all or certain groups of users. The ALA also believes that any organization that uses a rating system is violating the Library Bill of Rights, and the adoption of any sort of rating policy may very well be unconstitutional. Prejudicial labeling and ratings presuppose the existence of individuals or groups with the wisdom to determine what is appropriate or inappropriate for others. They presuppose that individuals must be directed in making up their minds about the ideas they examine, whereas the ALA affirms the rights of individuals to form their own opinions about resources they choose to read or view. Seeing as how we as educators in D41 seek to build students' inquiry and critical thinking skills, and seeing as how the adoption of the think tank's proposal to pilot multi-age classrooms seems to be the board's acknowledgement that physical age often differs from emotional maturity, and seeing as how the internet and social media tools can provide parents with the information needed to make an informed decision as to the appropriateness of materials for their children, I must ask not only that the Board of Education lift the ban on the perks of being a wallflower, but I also ask that no labeling system be put in place as a recommended solution to dealing with potentially controversial reading materials. To do so would be just as much an infringement on students' constitutional rights as the removal of the book. Censoring by any other name is still censorship.
Thank you.
Kate Manning.
Hi, I'm Kate. I would like to start by thanking the board for letting us talk today. And so
We have been told that we are supposed to be 21st century learners. With this book gone, isn't it taking away our rights to learn about homosexuality, peer pressure, abuse, and other things? Shouldn't we know this for the future? Banning this book is taking away from our 21st century learning. 21st century learning shouldn't only mean learning things useful for the classroom environment. It means learning things that will help us in life. And most of us here talking about the book are in 8th grade, and do you like if you could consider making your decision about the book by well, before we graduate, so we can have reassurance that kids our age could read this really like to read.
Thank you.
I just want to compliment these students. I think they have done a remarkable job. They are respectful, they are articulate, and I love the way they raise their voice for something that they feel very passionate about. I think it does represent the core of your think tank initiative and your problem-based learning. This was a problem I didn't have to plan. It raised itself, actually. And my kids came to me and said, well, how do we get our voice heard? And they figured it out. We walked through, we visited your website, we looked at the process. And I have to tell you, it's authentic. They are passionate about something, and, you know, we as adults, we lose that passion sometimes, and I don't want them to lose it because that's what's going to change the world. So I want to thank them. I think they're remarkable. And I guess the elementary school teachers that we did before, I thank you because you kind of started the whole thing. But I want to respectfully and out of courtesy ask you to please give them an answer by the May 28th award. Meeting. That's the last time that you will meet prior to their graduation, and I think that they deserve that. They've worked very hard, and they've tried very, I think, very well to work within the system. And so, as Kurt Samples said, you know, they are raising their voice to protect their choice. That's what you want them to do. That's what problem-based learning is. That's what 21st century learning is, and that's going to be their world. And I would respectfully ask you if that's possible. Could we get an answer to this question by May 28th?
Thank you.
Loretta Olson, day 9.
I think she left.
Yeah. Cooper.
I appreciate the response from Mr. Bochinski, concerning my points on the check ledger missing necessary information and the credit card bills not being listed. It's my understanding that these issues will be looked at the Finance Committee's May 28th meeting. I will hope that, as it states on the District 41 homepage, that this D41's transparency project believes in doing everything possible to make information easily accessible to all stakeholders. On my other issue dealing with the latest teacher's contract and the reneging of the former board president to meet with me on this issue,
that's incorrect.
I didn't know this was give and take.
Go ahead.
Because we can do that.
Mr. Cooper, please be respectful, and please give
your... I would appreciate that she would listen to your comments from beforehand.
Go right ahead.
So I'm disappointed in her 180 on this and apparent belief that a concerned taxpayer would just go away when being stonewalled. I do find interesting her inaction in comparison with statements she made to the Daily Herald during the last campaign for board election. One of her key issues... It was issue number 3, and unfortunately I left a copy on my desk at home, but I remember it said essentially that she wanted to help engage all stakeholders into becoming more fluid with what is going on in the district. Maybe she doesn't believe that anymore. Maybe now that she's not board president. Being a responsive board member isn't necessary.
Mr. Cooper, may I remind you, please be respectful.
I'm just making comments based on conversations and emails that we had.
Thank you.
And then the dissipation of those.
Thank you.
To the new board president, one of two that negotiated
1 minute.
This new contract, I'll throw Ms. Nelson's original offer to me in your lap. I have questions about many points in this contract. Are you willing to discuss them with me?
Thank you.
I'm Willie DeFabio. I'm a taxpayer. I live in the Hadley rural area. I'd like to thank you for letting me speak. I want to talk about my thoughts on the censorship. I'm not sure it's about censorship. I'm not sure that's the issue. I think it might be another issue, and one of trust. I suspect, though I haven't polled these young people, I suspect some of them are babysitters. I suspect some of them have bank accounts. So somewhere along the line, a bank trusts them to take care of the money that they put in the bank and to be good financial stewards, if you will. If they're babysitters, well, somebody trusts them because they're being put in charge in the care of children younger than they are. And yet we have, or somebody has, the audacity to question what they're reading, or are they responsible enough to read that and make decisions or raise questions with their parents? I also wonder this. I wonder if the trust plays out into the staff, that we trust these teachers with children every day. We trust the teachers to make sure our children are safe. That we trust the teachers that our children will learn. If there are issues, we call the kids in the carpet. We trust the teachers to do that. This board just signed this, I think it was a 3 to 4 year contract, and that's a real sign of trust. But when it comes to putting that to action, I sit there and go, wait a minute, don't they trust these adults to help these children learn? Don't they trust these children, so to speak, who also care for other youngsters? Don't we trust them to make good decisions? I really struggle with that quite a bit. I don't think it's a real reach to look at some of the ugly events that happen in our world today involving schools. Yeah, it just kept resting in my mind, and it dawned on me that no child was ever killed by a book. And yet we put our energy there, put our time and our focus, and we're sending these kids out of here with a diploma saying, yeah, we've done the best we can for you. And I really struggle with that. Can we really put them to the test to let them decide and to make judgments on reading material that the teachers have worked on in developing and bringing that forth? I really would challenge you all to look at how much trust do you have with the staff, for the teachers that care for these students, and how much trust do you have for the students to question some of the material they're reading and take it to their parents or take it to their teacher or take it to whoever to discuss that and help them learn. I wish you well with your mission, and I thank you for the time.
Thank you.
Mandy Howard. Well, my name is Mandy Howard, and I just like to say that as the inventor in high school, you will be exposed to a large amount of controversial things. People stand in the hallways making out. Girls and boys are openly gay. They're prison club. At some point, you'll find yourself in a situation where you have absolutely no idea what to do. Kids are in depression. Kids cut themselves. Kids have been sexually assaulted. These things happen. I'm sorry, but the banning of a book will not take away these issues. Please do not let the sheltering ways of one family affect an entire school. If you would reconsider the banning of this book, it would mean a great deal to Hadley and also personally to me, as this book holds dear to my heart. So please just reconsider this.
Thank you.
Kara Howard.
Thank you. Sitting on this side of the room seems a little bit strange for me, but I wanted to address the board on two things. First, I'd like to say thank you to the board, particularly Erica Nelson, for serving the past 2 years as probably one of the best
board president's most open and honest and engaging presidents that this board has ever seen. So thank you. And second, in my experience as a member of the Board of Education and initially a member of the Policy Committee, I would ask that the board, in reviewing the policy of full consideration, include a reexamination of that policy, in particular the term of age appropriateness. As a lawyer, we know big terms like that don't carry a lot of meaning per se, because there needs to be some kind of attachment. What does age appropriateness mean? And unfortunately, Mr. Black was quoted as using that as his standard in the newspaper, and whether that was exactly what you had said to the individual or not, but that was what was quoted, there have been a lot of questions about how do we define age appropriateness. And I think a better policy might include the term educationally appropriate, thus leaving what is educationally appropriate and sound with the educators and not so much with the board. I believe in my experience that this board will examine that policy properly. I know Dr. Reebok, in her role as superintendent, will do what she needs to do to engage the youth and literacy department and parents to appropriately address this issue. I just hope on behalf of the kids that this policy, I know it takes read-throughs, I know some of these things take a little bit longer than we'd like them to take, but I feel very confident that this board and our superintendent and administration will all work together to come to a very good solution for the kids and for what's educationally appropriate for our students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, look at that. I'll take like 15 seconds of my 30 or 3 minutes. I just want to advise the board, especially with the new members, don't ban a book you haven't read. Simple policy statement for the future. If you're going to take a bold statement and ban something, know what you're talking about. Read the book first. That's all.
Thank you. Anyone else, Mrs. Stecker?
First of all, I agree, and I'm against any kind of banning of a book. You know, hearing so many kids talk, and in the minutes I read last week, say that this book touches them. You know, if my daughter were at Hadley and this book was offered to her to read, and she's had a lot of trouble this year, and she's only in fourth grade. And if this were the kind of book that would appeal to her, whether she asked me if she could read it or not, if this was a book that she wanted to read and it would touch her and it would help her through, middle school years I think are the hardest years of anybody's life. And if this is a book that would make a difference in her life and help her through some tough years, I would have no objection to her reading that, whether she asked my approval or not. And I think that should be the case for any child, because a lot of parents whose kids might need to read it might say no to them. And those are just the kids that maybe need to read it anyway. And a lot of people may disagree with that because they think their kids should be asking permission. But this is just the kind of book that shouldn't be banned, because there are a lot of kids that need something like this to reach out to them. And books are just what do that to kids. Books are what sometimes help the kids that need it most get them through those difficult times. And this is the kind of book that shouldn't be banned. And I urge you all to read this book and think about those kids that are alone and that maybe don't have friends and that are different and do need this book to touch them and make them realize that they're not different and they're not alone. And just don't ban this book, please. And you know, make it so that it is optional reading. And no, nobody's forcing anybody to read this book, but leave it there so that they can if they need it. Please.
Thank you. Sarah, could you fill out a sheet so we have your name for the record, please? Thank you.
I am going to make one comment to conclude this part of the conversation, if I might, and that is that, and I think I said this at our last meeting, that we appreciate hearing the perspectives, particularly of our students. And I think Dr. Bruno expressed it quite well in saying that this is something for us to be proud of, that you have learned to have a voice and that our teachers have helped you along with your parents to have a voice and to share that voice with us. And that's extremely important and perhaps the best evidence of your good learning throughout the years here in District 41. The other thing that I wanted to say is that I think the board feels it wants to see a solution to this. I think perhaps I can speak at least from the majority that the concept of banning censorship is not one that's resting comfortably with them. Karen Carlson and I will begin tomorrow morning meeting with the literacy teachers at Hadley and trying to find the place where parents are partners and their expression of what their interests are as well as respecting the expertise of our teachers can find that common ground, and we hope that we'll be able to do that. Whether or not we can do that by the May 28th meeting in the structure that we have so that the board can actually take action on something is to be determined. Our usual process might limit that to some extent, but we'll see. Thank you for giving us a deadline. Thank you for giving us a goal. On the other hand, what we can give back to you in terms of our commitment is that we intend to go back to work on this and not let it drop, and that's to your credit for sharing your voice with us. So thank you.
I would add that we want to need a special meeting or whatever to make that commitment to these kids. You know, I would be okay with that. Otherwise, I feel graduation is going to have a lot of wallflowers. So we want to focus on graduation and not, you know, something else.
I don't know if John just made a motion there, but I would second his intent that if we can have a special meeting or two to help get to the MSW on if you that one.
Okay, anybody, any other public participation? Okay, back to presentations, reports, initiatives, and initiative updates.
Our next presentation is our PE curriculum update, and Gay Murray and Carrie Norton will be presenting the PE update. And I just want to say thank you to the PE teachers. I have had the good fortune of being the liaison to the PE teachers on our school improvement days when they meet. And it has been a great experience for me that they've welcomed me with open arms into their group and allowed me to enter into their conversations. And so I also am proud of the work that they're sharing with you today.
And you have to tell the new superintendent you've got to,
like, that he's the liaison.
Step it up and come join us.
All right, like Anna Drew said, I'm Carrie Norton. I teach at Lincoln.
Gay Murray, I teach here with my team partner, Deb.
We've been working on our curriculum for about 18 months now. We basically took our SIP days that we get and used a lot of that time to develop the different parts of it, collaborate with it. So we've used a lot of in-school time and not had to do a lot of outside work, but we are very proud of what we've created with the help of Ann and Carol Carlson to make this a great document. And it's still ongoing, but we've added some great things to it that we'd like to share. The elementary PE is fitness-based. It's based on fitness concepts and standards. So no longer we're doing a football unit, a soccer unit. They all correlate with fitness concepts. So our fitness-based concepts are muscular strength and endurance, cardiorespiratory endurance, and flexibility. So everything, we didn't take away a lot of things we taught, but we made sure that they're connected to these fitness components to make sure that we're stressing these. For our muscular strength endurance, to see where these things that we have been teaching go, muscular strength endurance is building and using specific muscles for muscle groups. So that's where our overhand, underhand throwing, catching, ball control with feet, dribbling with hands, striking, cross laterals. Those skills all go under that component. Cardiorespiratory endurance, how your heart and lungs work together to get oxygen to the body while exercising. That's our chasing, playing, dodging, many of our tagging type games. Jumping and locomotor skills fit in that. And obviously our fitness. Flexibility. We do a lot of different things for flexibility. It's the ability to use the body in full range of motion, but specifically that's where our dance and tumbling would fit in to the fitness-based concepts. We're also focusing on cooperation, which is the kids working together to accomplish goals, to do different things. Safety is a key in the gym. You know, we have 20 to 30 kids. If one class is in there, 50. And some of the gyms that have to double up all the time. So safety is a big key in that we're teaching our students daily to be safe in the gym. Teamwork, working together to accomplish a goal, group and partner work, and offensive-defense strategies. So these are also incorporated with those fitness concepts. We also have added nutrition. We've talked about where nutrition fits into the curriculum at what grade level. So we've taken it as part of the, I know at Lincoln and Franklin, we had adopted this the last few years and done some cross-curricular using art and music and library to teach some of these skills, but we're adopting it to make sure that we are teaching this part of nutrition.
It's kind of floating out there under some science concepts, I think, but it's kind of hit or miss at the schools, so our whole perfect place really would be PE when we're looking at health and those kinds of things. So, and the other two schools are definitely on board.
Yes.
And it keeps growing our unit as we go. So.
So in our nutrition, it's identify healthy choices and behaviors, classify food groups. There's teamwork in nutrition and recognizes what compromises a healthy plate. Our complete curriculum includes daily activity to instill knowledge and lifelong skills around fitness. And that's what the daily PE, and we are so glad that we have it in this district, and we know that there are districts that don't understand the importance of it, and we've always had the full support of District 41. And these kids know that daily activity is important, that I'm going to get exercise every day. And so that's, our curriculum is based on that daily activity, so they know, and that they're going to continue to do this throughout their life.
What I like, we really have just moved from skills and assessing skills. We still assess skills, but it's formative. It's not summative like it used to be. To find something that you can do the rest of your life. You know, we've added things like frisbee and, you know, mini golf and activities that kid bowling things. You know, the kids, you know, you don't have to just be able to be strong and run as fast as you can and, you know, those kinds of things. So I was excited. I'm a District 41 product. I grew up right down the street and I've been teaching for 30 years here. And I remember when I started in PE and I was one of those kids that was picked last because I was this little and wasn't really good at sports and all of that. And my goal was, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I am so glad that we finally found a better way to do this. That's just kind of my passionate thing. But I love the fitness approach. And it just fits so well with our LCs and everything that we're doing right now with making these kids being healthy for their life, you know, pursuing this as a lifelong thing. So I'm excited. We're all really excited about the change. We're still teaching them how to, you know,
Create an essential standards chart of the skills that we teach and the concepts we teach and how, and that was what we based our curriculum on originally, but we do have that essential standard chart. The things that we have created are very helpful. We will have, Debbie is retiring here at Franklin this year, so we will have a new teacher coming in, and I think the way that we've created an essential standards chart is like a cheat sheet, you can just go to it and figure out everything, has been a very, very big step for us to include in our curriculum. The units, like we had posted before, are aligned to fitness components. Units have vocabulary and terminology. This was something we felt was important, that when we're teaching different skills, that we're all using the same terms. And we communicated with Hadley to make sure that we're using some of the same vocabulary. But we have vocabulary that we can use throughout the district that we know that the kids know what things mean and what to do and what the terminology, so they're learning more than it's beyond just what's happening right there in the gym. They're learning other things with it.
Right, not just a word wall anymore, which is great to have. But with some of the new technology, we're going to talk about how we can really expand that vocabulary and make it, and we're all doing games now that include the learner characteristics as well, which has been actually quite helpful to me. So,
and we also have
it's a nice mess for the kids.
I don't know if that's there with our vocabulary terminology to actually show, and that's something we're going to be using our technology for. The visual aids for skills, we have pictures put up in the terminology and vocabulary portion of our curriculum, so there's pictures to see exactly what that skill looks like or exactly what that term means, that when we get our projectors and screens, we can show that to all of our students and have that as a visual aid all the time. This also aligns with our Think Tank multi-age groupings. When it's more fitness-based, we don't have to worry about
this, you have to play this activity or do this game at this skill level. It's very all-inclusive. You can do multi-age. If you have to combine different grade levels, these activities, most of them for the most part, can include anywhere from K through 5.
We at Franklin, we've been teaching multi-age gym classes for lots of years. We have 2-3s come in, 1-2s we can do together. When a 1-4 comes in, we have to pretty much separate them. But a lot of those levels really lend themselves nicely. And honestly, you don't know when you walk in who's a first grader and who's a second grader. You know, they blend really well together, even physically.
Teamwork, again, we have all our teamwork aspects of what we want them to learn for teamwork included in our curriculum. Complete lessons provide aligned to the essential standards. We have put in lessons of all of our activities that we had currently and aligned them so the objective and where they align are included as part of this curriculum. So again, a new teacher could come in and say, I need to do an activity for this, and it's all there as kind of an appendix to our curriculum. And as we add more games to it, we will make sure they're always aligned to each standard so you know exactly what it's teaching and the goal. And there's diagrams, and it's all there for you.
It's all tied into the state standards. There are 3 PEs. So yeah, that's all how this started.
We've also created some learner characteristic activities. We've modified some games and taken some games to help teach and reinforce our learner characteristics so that the students will learn them. And in doing this, to create some of these games, we learned a lot of ways where we can then adjust some of our activities and games to include anything in our curriculum, and especially when we get tied to STEAM or even social studies, there's ways we can tie, when we work with the teachers, to tie things into our curriculum, like we have the learner characteristic activities. Infusion of STEAM concepts. Again, this is part of our terminology. You know, PE relates a lot to science. We had to take a lot of science classes to be PE teachers, and so with using and doing things like force, speed, you know, bounce a ball, how much force. We've adapted some things and are looking forward to making our curriculum really stronger and correlate with the STEAM concepts so that we can be part of the whole movement forward. And then technology. This is our big piece. This is our big wish list. We really want to make those cognitive connections. And like we said, if we put our vocabulary and our terminology and we have it posted and we have pictures of the activities posted for the kids to see at all times using the screens, sound systems, anything that we can to help further enhance and get the kids involved, that's what we're looking to do. Our technology, as you know, we are looking for projectors and screens to be utilized in the gyms as visual aids for learning, teaching vocabulary, demonstrating skills and activities, teaching learner characteristics, and applying cognitive connections to kinesthetic learning. It will also allow greater integration into our STEAM lessons. Sound systems would be utilized in the gyms to help teach, perform, manage large groups, and create quality atmosphere in a large space.
And teaching dance is great. 14 classes a day is a long day. I mean, even for, and when, you know, we have an Xbox and we can put in some of the dance moves that everybody can follow, that they're still moving, but everybody can follow. It's a good way to use technology, and you know, something other than just sitting there playing it this way. You know, so we're excited about integrating more of that.
We included Churchill currently has a screen and projector, so we included some examples of ways they use it. Like this is the Xbox, where they have it projected on the screen, and all students are doing this dance game. Vocabulary terminology. They have the ball control, what the cues, what they know to do, posted all times. Now, are they always reading it? No, but it's always up there as a constant reminder for the students, nice and big, so that they can see and know the vocabulary and terminology. They've used it as station timer, so if the kids know how much time they have left. Assessment rubric. They put the assessment rubric up there so the kids know and they can see what they're doing so they can self-assess. Motivation. Again, here's a timer with some guys running on it that they use to help motivate the students to work harder, do whatever activity they're doing. So they've already had this in motion, and it's been a great success there. Our District 41 student PE goals. all students being engaged, enthusiastic, and PE. And I think that's really something that we have been promoting over the years, is to get involved. And like I said, we don't want just the star athlete to enjoy PE. We want every student to enjoy it and look forward to it. And I know I've heard from lots of parents, when I ask them what they do today at school, the first thing is always what they played in PE, what they did in PE, and the parents are like, yeah, I know all about these games. So we have seen that, and we want to continue that and keep the students engaged and enthusiastic. And it's not always how to run laps. No, that's not all you do. It's, we're sneaking that exercise in with a lot of fun.
You had fun, you won.
Yes. Intrinsically motivated. That's another thing that we've been trying to, motivate the kids. We're doing fitness stations. We tell the kids, I shouldn't have to be over here telling you, work hard. Your parents go and work out on their own, right? You don't have a PE teacher. They don't have a PE teacher getting them out of bed saying, go work out today. So try to encourage that and make them want to do their best. Respectful of others, that's key in PE. You have to respect your space, follow the rules, and they really, I believe in our classes, have learned respect, and we really enforce that.
You have to.
Yes.
Well, you have to be safe. Being safe is the overall writing issue in PE, because everybody's moving everywhere. Well, in order to do that, you have to be respectful. What does respectful look like? Playing fairly. What does playing fairly look like? Take it down. You break it down, and you get there. But, that's where I think the learner characteristics are helping.
Yep.
Because teachers are using them in the classrooms. It's carrying over. Well, how does that look like in your classroom? Well, what should that look like in the gym? And then you go from there. So it's been,
Make connections between present and future opportunities. Like I said, you're getting activity, you're working on your fitness, getting exercise, continue it. How could you do this? Like, we introduce a lot of, sport activities and skills, but our thing is, if you like it, go to the park district. I had some boys that really liked volleyball, so I looked up and tried to find something for fifth grade boys to play volleyball outside of school to help them so they can further do it and continue it, and we just kind of give them a taste where everybody has success and can enjoy it. Collaborative, a lot of games obviously are working together, teamwork, they have to collaborate to accomplish goals.
With people they might not enjoy, and that's part of being a team member, is to, work with them again for that.
Assumes responsibility for learning. As I said, we try and give them the skills, and then they continue to grow on them. And students pursuing a healthy lifestyle. Again, we're instilling this in our students so that hopefully the rest of their lives they continue to be healthy and successful and live productive lives.
It's only one for your kids,
yeah.
Right?
And that's the end of our presentation. Do we have questions?
How does this, the shift to fitness versus just skills, which, you talked about at CIT at one of our meetings and now in the presentation, how does it align in terms of helping our special needs students? What do you see as that part of the integration in terms of technology or some of the other things that you're looking at?
Well, I especially like technology, and visual cues help a variety of students, not just, special needs, but everybody can help. Some people are visual learners, some are kinesthetic learners. So that has definitely being able to use different ways. We have pictures of my teaching partner and I doing all our exercises that we use for our students, we can put it up on the board. It also allows for, we're not just going to play a soccer game. We're going to teach them skills, and it doesn't have to be we do two weeks of something. If there's a child that doesn't like something, if you mix it in and do other things, then they might come around to it, or it's like, okay, I'm looking forward to tomorrow to do something different. But I think we've included, we have in our essential standards chart broken down the skills that we do teach, the specific skills, and how we can vary them for different skill levels and different ways of learning as well, too.
Yeah. And we have classes here that are separate, our MIP classes. Those kids are all come to PE at least twice a week, some of them 5 days a week. They're fully included in PE art and music, usually, where they might not be in the classroom academically. So, again, we want to make sure that when they come, it's a safe place for them to be. When we have activities that they're comfortable doing as well. The kids, we get them pretty good about, we pair them up a lot of different ways so you're not just picking your best friend all the time and those kind of, the life skill kind of thing. But I just like that we're an area that those kids can really, they come and just, they get excited about it like any kid would get excited about it generally. So it's a positive place. Thank you.
Are you seeing any changes in behavior based on some of the things you do around fitness or nutrition?
We have had, you know, like in the nutrition unit, we teach them how to read labels. And I know we've come back and students have said, oh, I read my label and I know that this has so much sugar and I shouldn't eat it. So we've seen in that aspect of nutrition, kids have learned, and that was kind of our cross-curricular, like they've learned label reading in the library. So in LLC, they've done label reading, then we reinforce it again in PE, and we play games and activities where they have to read labels and do that many exercises and stuff like that. So I've definitely seen that in the nutrition areas as well.
The kids were asking about the new hot lunch program, and do we have any nutrition facts on that? And so we ask, and we haven't gotten a response yet for that. So that might be a PBL that we'll be looking at in the future. But it sparks interest at least.
Yeah.
You know, they go home and look at it maybe just a little bit more, and then maybe next year a little bit more, because, you know, we see the kids every year. That's the bonus we have. We can see the growth every year, which is really a neat thing about that.
Right.
Also, I'd like to straighten something out. You had mentioned that parents don't have PE coaches pushing them out. You've never experienced my wife in the morning. Some of us do.
I can imagine your wife, actually. Yeah. She has that after-school running form.
Yeah.
That's
not true for all parents.
Point well taken.
I have to ask, what grammar school?
I actually went to Ben Franklin, and I went to Glen Oak when we had eight.
So what did you graduate? When did you graduate?
These
are pretty good.
From high school in 1976.
Okay.
My dad was a teacher there, actually, before he died.
Okay. I graduated Adler. So.
All right, then. Then you may ask that question.
So we were in the same building.
Yes, definitely. Interesting. So Glen Ellen.
Yeah.
A lot of us come back.
Forest Pond.
So I really like the aspect that you're collaborating, if that's the right word, with Hadley. So the skills and the vocabulary will be somewhat similar, and so the kids can just pass right on.
Yeah.
And it'd be a seamless transition.
Yeah, that's what we, you know, and we've talked about, there are differences in our buildings because of facilities. You know, we all have slightly different facilities, and but if we're still teaching the same basic stuff, they should go to Hadley and pretty much be on an equal playing field, and they know what to expect from them and know what terms and vocabulary they have.
Do the other schools have the projectors in the...
Churchill is the only one. That's what we're asking for in the other gyms, to have that so we can use that.
It's on discussions.
Yeah,
discussions.
Right.
And those projections, is it? I appreciate, you know, all the work that you're doing, but is it more? I have 30 kids that I need to reach at one time, and a projection screen allows me to do it.
Yeah, it's like an ever-changing, I mean, think of it like a word wall, you know, like ever-changing, that we can put anything up there to help remind them, to help teach them, to give them cues. We can also use it, you know, we can plug the iPads into the computer, into it, the Xbox games, and it's an ever-evolving teaching tool to be utilized in the gym. And not only for us, but other programs outside of school day can use it, too.
Carrie, you know, one of the things that at one of our meetings, when they were demonstrating it at Churchill, what struck me was the ability to have a demonstration done on the screen and the teachers free then to be among the students watching how that technique is being utilized by students, so that you're able to walk from student to student making some adjustments, which you can't do if you're demonstrating. You can't do the assessments as easily as you can if they're watching the demonstration and then you're able to move around. I think that, for me, as from a teaching standpoint, was one of the most impressive pieces of it. And I think Carrie mentioned...
Every day, of course not. You know, we don't need high-tech every day. No, absolutely not. Certainly for some of our areas, though, it would really make a difference.
And, you know, to ask a very hard question, if we took it away from Churchill, But if it got taken away, would they be able to continue with this excellent level of service that they're providing now?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that is just something that would enhance it even more. I mean, we can still provide excellent PE to our students without it, but it would definitely be a tool that we could even move to the next level.
Can we teach in the classroom here without computers?
Yes.
But they're a nice tool to have.
They're a nice tool to have.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, it's obvious to me that you put a lot of time into this and you're very passionate about your work, and so I thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Everybody get up and move.
Yeah. Should have movement break in there.
Our next presentation this evening, thank you, for Dave and Matt, for being so patient, is the Parent-Teacher Advisory Committee recommendations, and Matt will explain a little bit about the committee. Matt facilitates it, but it is a committee comprised of teachers and parents from each of our buildings, and it is an advisory committee that is mandated by school code. So, Matt, I'll let you go ahead and...
What an exciting night to be a part of this. It's pretty thrilling itself. Great to see all our students, from my little ones all the way up to the current experiences, and then just all the way through to the eighth graders. So it's a reflection of what a great district we all work for and are passionate about the services here. Our committee really was comprised of this year of 18 D41 parents and educators led by Ann. We also had the expertise of Mr. Cicerella for one of our meetings to lend his insight as well. And what we basically, if you go to the next slide, that's our legal requirements of the Parent Teacher Advisory Committee. Some of that could focus a lot of work on aligning the last few years and making sure that our policies and our practices are aligned. What we really focus a lot of our discussions this year on were on school safety, consistency of policy and practice, and the climate and culture of our schools.
So,
next slide.
So the focus, the focus of our committee primarily this year was on safety within our schools, in the school and around the school. So as a group, we came up with 8 different recommendations we'd like to share with you. First one is provide safety education training for all staff, including custodians, support staff, and lunch supervisors. There's a lot of things going on at one time in the school, and there are students that are under their careful watch as well, as in addition to classroom teachers and gym teachers. So I think it's important to get everybody on the same level. Secondly, we were going to conduct more safety drills in school lockdowns, including some times that we don't often think of a bad occurrence happening, like at lunch or at the lunchroom or the recess. So we always assume we're going to be sitting in the classroom and something would occur. And so I think we need to take it a step further. And what are we going to do on the playground when something goes on? Everyone's going to, it needs to move simultaneously, well coordinated. And it's something I think we should need to take a look at as well. The third one is examine additional partnership with the police. Now, I know that Hadley has told me that the police have come into the buildings, and I think it's some of the elementary schools as well. I'm not sure at Churchill, but they want to take a look and see what is the building layout, because in the event of something going wrong, you need to know where to go, where the hot spots might be. So it's this is just one area, an additional area where teaming with the police might be another benefit for us.
And it's also led to just that communication piece of with the police and information that might flow in both directions that might make our job a lot more effective. So if there's information at the school that might have an impact on the community, we'll reach out to the Glenelg Police, and we're having that same conversation coming our way.
We also wanted to take a look at investigate safety-related practices as it intersects with master facility planning. I know Bob was involved in this conversation. relative to cameras and lighting and in different parts of the around in and around the building, fencing, make sure that you know we're safe as possible by having everything enclosed. The fifth one was review safety measures around the playground and other school grounds. I don't see it at Churchill. I'm a third grade Churchill teacher, by the way. But talking with Matt and some of the other teachers, there are times when there might be someone out there swinging a golf ball, got a golf club, or walking their dog through the area where the kids have gym out at Cadley, saying, who are they, and should we be taking a second look at when the kids are out there, do we need to do something a little bit more to make sure that that person's not a problem? So how do we approach that? I know Churchill is pretty well secured, but we need to take another look at the whole program. I guess there are new PTA safety chairs for each building, which is going to be new next year.
Renewed.
Pardon?
Renewed. They used to be in place and
renewed,
then it sort of didn't fill for a while, and so the PTA council has made a vigorous effort to renew that position.
One of the things that many of us have run into is the development of after-hours entry protocol for each building. There are activities that go on a lot more heavily, but even at the elementary level, where now that the doors are locked at 4 o'clock, and you know, here comes 5 o'clock and nobody's in the office to let them in. People are running around the building trying to get in, banging on doors, and so forth. So we need to think through how are we going to handle the entrance issues after 5 o'clock, say.
And then it is building specific, since each building has its own layout and their own challenges and areas. And then we also talked about just the need to find an effective vehicle to relay that information to the parents. And it also includes things like our buzzer systems at each building when they're entering during the school day as well.
And the last one is provide internet safety education. It's such an evolving issue, as we all have kids. I have four daughters, and I know it's concerning to me a lot. But we need to take continue to look on an ongoing basis at what can they access while they're under our watch. I mean, a lot of the things that we're doing now, we're doing investigative work on the computers. Can something come up that they shouldn't see? It may happen. Do kids know about Facebook more on your level? Maybe Instagram, which was shocking to me that my daughter, the fifth grade daughter, was on it, and it caused more problems for her in like 3 weeks than I think she had it through 1 through 4. So, my impression is, that's a scaled down Facebook. It's equally as challenging if it's not used correctly. So there are a lot of these things that continue to come up, and we don't all have the, I know I don't, I'm not looking for the latest thing in Facebook, but our kids do, and they want it all the top, where are all my friends going to be? And so we have to keep on top of that, and maybe have an ongoing education about
that, focus on that ongoing, that early and often and ongoing, and especially nowadays where the lines between where school begins and home ends through technology is really blurred. It really is, I always make the case, I didn't go into education to be a janitor. I don't want to clean up messes. I think we can be proactive and teach students and parents and educate them on the proper use of this of technology. We won't have as many issues on the back end. And then there were a few recommendations that the board, through the robust discussion that we had, came up with, that we felt more recommendation necessary to the board. They fit to some other avenues, but definitely wanted to make you aware of. We had the recommendations that we're making to the Culture Care Committee. The first one being just to have students create safety PSA, public service announcement related to safety issues in social media. And just that would be something that could be accessed and posted and parents can use as a teaching at home, just much like the PE teachers and Kirk had mentioned earlier, so we can start teaching some of the same common language and the same common practices. The second one was develop a protocol for students to follow if they are a victim of bullying or bullying bystanders. Right now, currently, the culture care has some very clear language about, you know, if you're witnessing behaviors and you're seeing somebody being mistreated or and you're seeing some bullying behavior, we want to be more explicit as a person who won a job, main job is a dean of discipline. There's a lot of opportunities where students are victims of some mistreatment or bullying, and they don't know how to respond, and parents don't know how to respond, and they're, you know, giving some advice that of managing and not bringing us in, and we want to educate them again to bring those issues to the forefront as soon as possible, and let's work in as a partnership and collaborate together. So that's a recommendation we think will be important for that group to look at, and then provide enhanced education opportunities for parents, students, staff regarding bullying with attention paid to cyberbullying. Again, this is that part of us all getting on the same page and something that's an issue that affects us all. And then not represented here, there were some Hadley specific two recommendations that came out that we passed on to Hadley BLT. Thought it was important to share as well. One would be reestablishing a year-long homeroom connection to create that go-to person for the students. It used to be that connection to the lunch period, and we'd like to, you know, create that safe and supportive school and have somebody that students can connect with for the whole year that maybe they're not necessarily a teacher, but an adult that they can go to when they have a question or a concern. And then piggyback, I guess Wes does a nice job of, this goes to that culture of collaboration. They do a nice job of having a clubs and activity night, and we'd like to mirror that at Hadley so that students that are coming through startup day and then new students to our school will know what activities, because there are a lot of them. And the board has, in the last 5 years that I've been in the district, has really supported, and we've grown our after-school programs to where they used to be, you know, few and far. Now it's happening daily, and we want to make sure that students are aware of it. If we know that we can connect kids socially, emotionally to the community of Hadley, then we will be able to, and only then will we be able to reach our true potential. So that's what we like to recommend to Hadley. Any questions?
One thing I just want to mention for the board, the PTAC, the group charged by school code, is really charged to examine policy. And each year we look at the policy, we look at the discipline policy specifically, and if there are recommendations from PTAC to the board as it relates to policy, then that would initiate board action. But because since we did the matrix, the redesign of the disciplinary matrix, really the PTAC has, while they examine policy, has not found anything to create recommendations around that would require board action, but more so just administrative recommendations, things to have further considerations given to. And so that's what we've seen in the last 2 years, are recommendations that come out of PTAC that are really, as you can see, great recommendations and good food for thought to pass along for administrative consideration.
I have a question for you back on number two, I think it was. If we went back, it was about drills. Is that right?
Safety drills?
Safety drills?
Safety drills, yes.
And I grew up on the south side of Chicago, and I remember the air raid drills and getting under the desks and that sort of stuff. And I don't look back on that fondly. And I'm wondering, there's a lot of cause for this, and it looks like there's a lot of good work done here. Is there anything that we can tie it to statistically or empirically that these drills improve situations or change situations or somehow have an effect before we expand drills? Do you know if there's any...
Can we tie it?
There's a book that is written. It's called Free Range Children, and it debunks a lot of our fears today about safety. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if we have that kind of critical eye when we look at the recommendations to make sure that we're not reacting to current events, but looking and saying, before we start increasing drills, does it do anything?
Well, I think the piece here that's probably worth looking at, and more may not be better, but the committee's conversation really dealt with, we do safety drills each year mm-hmm. that are required by the state.
Absolutely.
And so I think that perhaps more is not the right word, but different. You know, okay. One of the parents raised the question, if everybody's out at the beginning of the school day, nobody's come into the building yet and something happens, do we know what to do?
The more was the part that had me concerned.
Yeah.
I agree with all the rest of it. I've often done
maybe
it.
Maybe
a lot of the discussion
times.
Was really just about education. None of us look forward to disrupting a learning environment and taking kids and putting them in hallways or out on the back field. But what we really want to do is, if there was an emergency situation or in any one of these environments, would our students know what the program? Do we know? And our self analysis was, we probably don't know enough. So I think that's a great point of. Just more of that education piece.
I guess I'll go on the opposite side of Dean. I think, you know, let's make them efficient and effective. But I do have a couple questions. You talked about before the kids get into school, but was there ever a thought of during a, you know, after school function with the parents in the gym or whatever, there's going to be a drill tonight, and this is how it's going to work. And because when that happens, you're going to get 60 or 70 parents running for the doors, mm-hmm. protecting their kids, and that may not be the safest thing in the world to do at that time. So I don't know if you took that into consideration. Another, and you don't have to answer it now, but did you also look at, should something happen at Ben Franklin, what's going to happen at Churchill, at the other three schools, you know, and have
yes.
you know, so
we do have that. That's,
you do have that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's in our central.
Yeah, as well as if something happens in Lombard or mm-hmm.
We with the buses. Too,
yeah, the buses different. And the transport.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. And the internet is a wonderful thing, but we all know as parents we're the last to jump. You know, we're bought on Facebook now, and Tumblr, Instagram, Twitter is the thing to do. So. You know, I think it's more of the let's look at the core of the communication and not really the vehicle that gets there. So.
And it's to go back to your first comment on the drills, we, you know, that's a partner. We probably should have aligned it in our talking points with the education piece and public service about it, and just that protocol would come first, and then the education would come, and then we would again look at that. Being highlighted more so than the actual drill.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you very much for your good work and for also being patient this evening to make the presentation.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, action items. The consent agenda. Are there any items, board members, would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately, including the final personnel report, which we all have in front of us, the blue sheet. Any items any members would like to be removed? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes human resources, the personnel report, which includes employment recommendations and resignations, other matters, including board meeting minutes, the May 6th, 2013 special meeting. May I have a motion?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Elcher?
Yes.
Mr. Buchensky?
Yes.
Ms. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Chadwick?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. 2013 amended budget. Public hearing on the 2013 amended budget was held earlier this evening. The administration is recommending that the Board of Education approve the 2013 amended budget as presented. May I have a motion to approve the 2013 amended budget?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I just want to mention one thing. You have a blue sheet in front of you on the amended budget summary, which is there's only one correction on there. If you look on the cash balance as of 6/30/2012, that has been adjusted to reflect the accurate projected. I shouldn't say accurate; it's just a projected fund cash fund balance that we have currently. Everything on else on that document is correct.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Pachinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Copier paper bid results. Administration is recommending that the Board of Education approve the copier paper bid from Unisource in the amount of $26.20 per case, $1,824 for a 24-month period, resulting in a total cost of $47,788.80. This pricing will be effective July 2013 through June 2014. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
I got a question, Sam. Just with the number of cases, I don't with the technology that we're putting in place and the laptops and all that for the next year. Is the 1824 cases, is that still a relative number? May not be a needle mover, but it is.
Patrick, can we motion and second the recommendation, and then part of the discussion you may
sure.
ask those questions.
Sure.
So sorry, do we have a motion?
A motion.
Drew? Mrs. Nelson, second. Now discussion.
Sorry, go ahead, Patrick. Certainly the goal is to become paperless.
Yeah, right.
Eventually. And we are looking to reduce each year some number of cases. But we do, this is about what we go through. And what we're hoping is that as we see the infusion of technology over the next 3 years, is that this will drop dramatically. Because many of the paper uses our classroom
right.
Printing as opposed to, you know, we do a lot of office printing too. But
okay.
As I recall from the Finance Committee, the relative cost for this bid was actually less than the prior year.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So Bob actually did garner additional savings.
Right. Not in the reduction of the amount, but in the cost of the paper.
And this may be a silly question, but I guess there aren't any silly questions. The brand of paper, EconoSource, I didn't realize there were that many different brands of paper.
Well, we had five bid results, I think. So for different paper that, you know, we gave a kind of a standard of the paper and then...
Okay. Any other?
Yeah, well, I guess to kind of go on the silly question, I guess. to me, paper is paper, but are we buying 26 a box of paper and we're using twice as much because it's
no, no, because we've identified a certain standard
okay.
of paper.
Okay, perfect. Great, thanks.
You know, that's kind of a trial and error
yeah.
experience.
All right, good.
I'm glad we have paper.
Good. Yes, I know.
Good for kids to draw.
Scribble
right?
on, yeah.
Yeah, on paper.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Mr. Pachinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
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 Yes. Elementary LMC and classroom laptop refresh. The administration is recommending that the Board of Education approve the acquisition of 1800 HP 6470B laptops from the Tiger Direct through a 3-year fair market value lease with American Capital Leasing. The approximate annual cost of the lease will be $377,487. The administration further recommends that the board approves the acquisition of 150 iPads from Apple through a 3-year fair market value lease with American Capital Leasing. The approximate annual cost of the lease will be $27,222.73, with the total at the close of the lease approximately $81,668.19. May I have a motion to approve the administration's the administration's recommendation as presented.
Motion.
Second. Discussion.
This cost is factored into the recent budget, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And in our five-year projections.
In our five-year projections. And Mike, the whole question, I think Steve brought it up with not buying these until the summer, Europe and all that other stuff.
Well, that was just the two servers. Actually, that's for the Hadley LMC. That was already approved at the last meeting.
Yeah, right.
And, I did look into it a little bit more closely, and the reason they were pulled from the European market were for compliance issues, more than likely electrical standards, which are different than what we have here in the States.
And they got big plugs.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please, Mrs. Stark.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Chensky?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. 2013 classroom furniture bid results. The administration is recommending that the Board of Education approve the purchase of furniture for 32 21st century classrooms with the approximate cost of $213,237.08. The purchase of STEAM equipment at the approximate cost of $77,964.87. Purchase of furniture for the Hadley LMC at the approximate cost of $135,963.43. And miscellaneous purchases of approximately $12,522.68 for a total furniture cost of $439,688.06. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion. Second.
Discussion.
Just want to reinforce with this, because I know we talked about it before, we have talked about this for a while, but that the inclusion of these classrooms, I know that some parents have brought this up either anecdotally to board members, but also in meetings, about the fact that the transition to the 21st century classroom furnishings has made a difference in terms of how their kids are learning. And so I'm personally glad to see we're kind of finishing off and moving in that direction. And I think it was either at the last meeting or the meeting before, there was a question about the cost and when we'll be done equipping all rooms. So,
well, next year, if we move at the same pace that we did this year, we would hope that next year we would finish the elementary
building. That's what I thought. Okay, thank you.
So how many are left in the elementary buildings?
Bob?
I'm right here. So we did 8 the first year, 24 the second, 32 this year. We're well over halfway there. I would expect to be able to finish it next year. I would expect to finish it next year.
So does that mean there's 40 left or 30 left?
There's about 120 elementary classrooms district wide.
Okay.
So
you've done 64.
We're 64 after this year.
Okay. And you do them all in the summer while the kids are.
That's correct.
Right. So 48 is not whatever that is, whatever my math was. No problem.
Okay.
Good.
Any other questions? I have a question. Bob, what is the $12,522, the
miscellaneous equipment that principals ask for, storage cabinets, whatever it may be?
Any other questions, comments? Roll call, please, Mrs. Stecker.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kuchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Yes. 2013 summer painting project. The administration is recommending that the Board of Education approves the painting bid from Bill's Painting Company Incorporated for the 2013 summer painting project at Hadley Junior High School in the amount of $118,580. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
I do want to share, just I'm just pass it along, the color scheme of Hadley, which is going to be quite interesting. And
I have no input.
And it will have, one of the interesting things about it is that it's using the motif of the LMC redesign and the circular pattern there that welcomes you into the LMC and using that circle pattern throughout the building. So it will be, I think it's going to really be energizing and very exciting, and the colors are bold. You can, we can pass it out there. And like our elementary classrooms, there will be, you know, more than one color in a classroom, with a teaching wall being the kind of the highlight color, and then some accent pieces within the other walls.
I may have been missed the meetings. Was there any student participation in
no.
selection?
No.
Okay.
Not on this one. There was not. Good question, though.
Any other?
Does it look like that? The
I'll reserve that.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please, Mrs. Stark.
Mr. Kenwood?
No.
Mr. Brzezinski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. 2012-2013 final school calendar, declaration of last day of school.
Well, the last day of school, we are recommending to the board that we maintain our current calendar, which does not include the emergency day that we needed to use in April. And we're able to make that recommendation because we do have an additional day in our calendar that is scheduled beyond what the state requires. And so by not making that day up, we still are compliant with the school district. But as we looked at the total end of the school year and the activities of that ending of the school year and bringing students back on a Monday for a half-day school improvement day, we didn't see that there was a strong educational value in making up that day, and so we are recommending that we maintain the calendar as it is. Now, should we have an emergency day in the next 2 weeks, we'll be back to you because we would then be required to make up time.
We have a motion to approve the 2012-13 final school calendar.
Motion.
Second. Any discussion?
Yes, I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue really for you is if we had school on Monday as a half day,
mm-hmm.
We don't feel we would have the participation. I mean, if I'm a teacher and I have my plans laid out, I mean, aren't I going to short the kids a day?
Well, it'll have to have a day that's adjusted. And so that last day, that half day that now is Friday, certainly will have to be adjusted to some of the activities that they do at the end of the year.
I don't know. I feel awkward about this because I think we're at the low end anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel that, and I see the rationale of kids not showing up, but that'd be the parents, not the kids, I guess, right?
Well, parents do make that decision whether they send their children to school.
Any other questions, discussion? I had a parent call me today to ask me if May 24th, the Friday before, was a SIP day, because apparently it's some iteration of a calendar this year that was a SIP day. It may have been an early iteration of the calendar. But she asked me to clarify to be absolutely sure.
There was an error in the calendar when we first posted it.
Okay, so it was just a clerical error.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So she probably didn't printed that one and didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Glad she called again.
Roll call, please, Mrs. Stucker.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mr. Brzezinski?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
I have a couple things I wanted to share with you. One is, of course, the enrollment report that you have, and you'll see that in general, end of year enrollment has dropped just a little, but basically holding stable as it has done all year. The second item is there are three PTA meetings remaining, and because we have not created a new schedule for you, I'm just going to simply ask if there's anyone who can attend these meetings. Wednesday, May 15th, that's in 2 days, we have the PTA Executive Council last meeting of the year. That's at 7:30 p.m. The next is the Abraham Lincoln PTA meeting, which will be 9 a.m. this Thursday.
Sorry, Anne, I think it's...
Did it change?
It's at 7 p.m.
So 7 p.m.
That's May 16th. And then Erica did send an email requesting someone to cover the May 16th Churchill meeting at 6:30 p.m. Did you have anyone?
Right. I haven't heard from anybody. That meeting is a combination, like a lot of schools do, their end-of-year meeting with a social. So it's going to be at Jen Mallett's house. She lives on Maria Court, which is right near Hadley, 1551 Maria Court. So...
This is on the 16th?
Yeah, this Thursday. I'm traveling to a work, so I won't be there.
That is also true for the PTA Council.
Yeah, it's 7 o'clock.
That one is 6:30, I have.
Yeah, it's not. It's 7.
It's at 7?
Yeah.
Thursday, 7, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anybody who can do either of the other two?
I'm going to be at the PTA Council.
Okay, that takes care of that.
I'll be in Lincoln on Thursday.
Okay, great. Thank you. Covered. And finally, I wanted to raise with the board, I have shared some emails with you from a community member who has an interest in a public discussion surrounding the appointment of an additional assistant principal position that we took away a couple years ago and have looked to return for this next fiscal year. And so we will schedule for May 28th. A discussion on that to talk about the rationale behind the assistant principal position and what our current plans are, and if necessary, ask for board approval at that same meeting if the board is inclined to do so.
I think the email you forwarded also asked a question around violation of the Open Meetings Act, so it would be nice to have just a ruling on whether that did happen or not and what our process should be so that it doesn't happen.
We did not violate the Open Meetings Act, but certainly in terms of the question that's raised, we're not going to share the conversation we had in closed session relative to assistant principals because it was related to personnel. But if we can get a ruling on that, if you wish, from our attorneys, is that what you're asking?
Well, I'd like to know if we did or didn't.
No, we did not.
Can we back up to the enrollment report? Do we have any numbers on the number of kindergartners that signed up next year?
I don't have current numbers, but I can get that to you and send it in communication to you. I don't know what our current pre-kindergarten enrollment is at this moment.
Okay.
Jill, thanks for reminding me. There are 453 elementary students in portable classrooms this month. Thank you for reminding me.
No problem.
And Joe, that will change probably weekly in terms of our kindergarten enrollments because they come in all the time. So we typically are pretty low at this time of year and see a bigger increase around end of June and then again in August because many of our families don't, yeah.
To follow up for the record also on John's question about the Open Meetings Act, the email also included me in terms of some board minutes and conversation. I did talk with Ann and did re-listen to those board meetings and also went through the closed session minutes with, to your point, John, concern about a violation, which I know this board works really hard at and the administration as well. So,
we want to put that to us on the 28th,
so thank you.
Thank you.
Board reports. Any committee reports or other reports?
I have.
You should have told
me. I have three things. Two, but now I have three. I attended the Spring Orchestra concert Tuesday, April 30th at Bistro Gym, and just wanted to congratulate Mrs. Alimas and Mrs. Vasquez and all the orchestra students on the fine job. And I'm not remembering, but one of the orchestras was a state champion again for the countless number of years now in a row, and I apologize for not remembering how many years that really was. So that is a testament to our staff and the dedication of our students. So congratulations. The policy committee met May 1st, and we reviewed Section 1, which is a very small section, so we'll have a first reading most likely at the May 28th board meeting, which will also include the press updates and just the Section 1 updates. We also finalized the school board policy and procedures process map, which is basically a map to tell the policy committee where to go and when to do it. And thanks to Mrs. Stecker for that. Again, the next meeting will be sometime in June. We haven't determined yet because we haven't determined the makeup of the policy committee. But having said that, I've created my recommendations for the policies, for the committees for the next 2 years, and I think you've all been provided with copies of those. And I don't know if we need to have discussion today, but I'd like your feedback as to the membership on each of those committees for board policy, and I guess we'll finalize those sometime in the near future.
We could consider them finalized unless there is any discussion relative to membership on them.
Thank you, Sam.
Do you want discussion now or next meeting? Sir.
I would suggest
next meeting? You have some time to think about
this. Giving your comments either now, and then we can have discussion at the next meeting.
Yeah. My comment is similar to the comment I had a couple of years ago, is, you know, these are standing committees, and are there any things in the district that we think are important enough that a board member should sit on a committee? Maybe it's an ad hoc committee, but, you know, a committee position that could be for a while. You know, Think Tank is an example of one where, you know, maybe if we had had a board member on it, we would have had better, you know, just more feedback to the board on the process. Facilities might be another one. I don't know. I throw it out there to the team to think about that. Mm-hmm. Decide if you think it makes sense to do that.
If there, you know, in probably in the next several months when you form new direction or continue directions, that you'll be making some redeterminations of new initiatives. And
I guess I say this because if there's a board member that's thinking, you know, or something like that, maybe they'd say, well, maybe I'm not interested with this committee and I want to do something else. Just a thought.
I will say that I've had discussions with several board members about several creating several ad hoc committees, I guess I would call them, in the near future, and we're still discussing that. And most of those, some of those at least, will, you know, I don't want to say for certain, but will probably become a reality. But I don't think it's appropriate at this time to obviously form those committees or put membership to the committee now. In John's vein, in that I think as a new board we need to determine what our direction will be, and will that be in a workshop or something else. But I think that's probably the appropriate first step to take. And then based on what our direction will be, then we can certainly talk about committees that may be formed to achieve those goals and directions.
But one thing, what's our flexibility to form one or two ad hoc committees to help us achieve our goals? We could swap some spots in some other committees, right? I mean, that's one thing we can do. I mean, it seems like it's a 2-year appointment, but come up with 2 or 3 ad hoc committees, and someone really wants to be on it, they don't have enough time to be on the other committees, they can find somebody to substitute their spot, correct?
We can certainly have conversations about that, yes.
I mean, if we have those goals out there, and we think it's that important to form such a committee, then I think that would be a modest thing to
provide that type of flexibility.
Sure, and that's certainly something that we could talk about.
The other comment I want to make briefly is I've spoken with Sam about Supplemental Pay Committee, which meets twice a year, sometimes a third meeting, and what I suggested to Sam is that that I'd like to stay on it for this year and then going into 2014-15, bring on another board member to transition that person so that you kind of understand the flow of it and all that, and I can do that transition and then move on and have that other person do the second year. So that would be another kind of rotating position as well. So.
Certainly don't have any problem with that either.
Transition.
Okay, discussion items.
I just have two quick things. One was on Saturday at Hadley was the POW conference, which is the second year that Hilary Shoemade, a literacy teacher, has coordinated this, and with the help from the PTA, which is an incredible support system there, but also other teachers, and that stands for Powerful Outstanding Women. There were more than 100, well, there are 130 girls, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, registered with their mom or grandma or aunt. But then that day showed up, there were probably, I think, another 30 kids that showed up. So it was a really great day. I was able to stay for the opening speaker, Tiffany Broussard, who comes from the College of DuPage. She's a communications faculty member who gives a wonderful motivational opening speech. And then there are a series of small group activities, educational activities that they can go to, anything from entrepreneurship to health and fitness, a whole series of things. So. Just want to, in absentia of Hilary or any of the team being here, thank them for that. And Matt Edelman was the administrator on duty, so he had a chance to be there too. And it was just a really exciting year for this again. So support for that. It's just a great way of reinforcing a lot of the messages around giving kids voice and having their parents, grandparents, moms be a part of that day. So it was a really neat, really neat day. So kudos to Hilary. And then we all got this through Lent, but I made a copy of the pension reform that's kind of out there now, and I thought this was a really good, if you opened this up, kind of view of the Cullerton-Holmes bill and the options of, back and forth in terms of what the legislature is going to be voting on. So the audience is a picture of kind of the outline. You can get this on the website also from the state of Illinois.
Erica, that you also received the Madigan proposal.
And Madigan's proposal as well, yeah, which was in copy attached to it. So, more stuff going on with that. The next Lent meeting is
Friday.
Friday, right? So I'll be out of town for that from work, but, we'll get
I'll
an
be
update.
There.
Yeah, we'll get an update from Peg. So we'll keep people posted. At least there's conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion items.
Our first discussion item is the request for additional pocket tables for the lunch service at Ben Franklin and Churchill, which would allow them to host their lunch program in the gymnasium and to have a single lunch period, which would mirror what we are able to do at both Forest Glen and Lincoln. And this discussion has originated with Finance Committee and has moved from Finance Committee to Board Discussion. Any questions?
Just what drove the need for a one lunch period?
To mirror the other schools was one driver, and then to be able to create uninterrupted blocks, equal blocks of time between the morning and the afternoon. And when I say uninterrupted, I mean uninterrupted by lunch. I mean, obviously, there's art, music, or PE that comes into either the morning or the afternoon.
So is this, we still have, this doesn't impact transitions?
No. It doesn't make fewer transitions.
And is this a result of the two blocks of literacy and STEM?
It is, mm-hmm.
How is the breakfast program at Churchill being affected by this as well?
The breakfast meeting? Program will probably be housed in the multipurpose room, and they only pick. Will it be in the gym?
No, it'll be. They're eating in their classroom. So
but they'll pick up in the multipurpose room.
Hallway.
Oh, in the hallway. Okay.
They have maybe decided that would be the best way to control kids coming.
Okay, instead of the multipurpose room.
So that kids don't have to walk the building.
Yeah.
So, but they will, they'll pick it up and take it to their classrooms.
Any other discussion?
Okay, we'll bring this back for action at our next meeting. And our next discussion item is the projection for the elementary physical education, which you heard the presentation on this evening, and Mike presented the projection request to finance and is now here for discussion. We are asking that in the case of two of our schools that don't have the large gym, which would be Lincoln and Forest Glen, that two projection systems are provided so that PE takes place in two different locations because of the size of their gym. They can't hold a double classroom in the gym as Ben Franklin and Churchill can. And as was noted, the PTA purchased the projection system at Churchill.
So at Lincoln and Franklin, there'll be two separate systems in each gym?
In order to create parity of instructional opportunity and learning opportunity for students.
They're not mobile?
They're not mobile. And because they teach every period of the day.
So they're both gyms are being used simultaneously all the time.
And how much use might these get in terms of community? I know we have park district programs.
They may get quite a bit. We've certainly used the projection system at Churchill for, I don't know that we've used it for much community other than PTA events, and there have been several PTA events that have been used the projection system. Park District, I don't know. I mean, we would probably have some caution about that just to ensure the proper use of the equipment, but professional development, full staff opportunities, we anticipate that these will be used for those as well.
Because that's really the only space where you could fit everybody.
True. And we've had professional development for all of our elementary teachers at Churchill often. I mean, always every year. You know, there's at least one institute day where we're at Churchill.
Patrick, I think it was you that asked the question when we had the presentation on the PE revised curriculum about if you took it out, could you still teach? And I think our teachers are still here. I thought that response was appropriate, which was sure we could still run an excellent program, but if you add it, there's an enhancement. And I think in trying to understand the difference now in the PE curriculum, which goes from a skills based to more of a fitness based, which is more broad based, the application of the technology, because kids are just used to it. I think especially in the time frame that we have PE, which is 20-minute blocks, is that correct? Is such a quick turnaround that that wasn't something that we talked about, but I remember it coming up in a previous meeting around this and how quickly they have to set up and kind of launch. So the technology would also be used for part of that, which is a more seamless approach to the curriculum.
Well, and I think, as I said, from my perspective, one of the things that Gay mentioned is, maybe I don't care, or Gay mentioned, that the shift from summative assessments in PE to ongoing formative assessments. So they're assessing students all the time on those fitness concepts. And I just think the projection allows them to be seeing more students than they would otherwise have a chance to see. So I think from the assessment perspective, it'll be a great tool for them to use.
And one of the selling points was also room size or class sizes.
Mm-hmm.
But did I hear that Lincoln and Franklin have separate rooms, so the sizes are
Lincoln and Forest Glen will have single classrooms in a small. The gym is still a larger in room environment
with multiple large amount of students in it.
Only at Churchill and
right.
at Franklin will you have two classes
right.
simultaneously having PE in the same space.
So this is basically, again, I'm not questioning the teaching, but this is not a. We need the videos because we have 40 students and I only have one instructor. It's education.
Yes. I mean, it's the sole reason for having this is not about being able to
talk louder to more people.
No, yeah. It is not. You know, there is a difference between having 25 students in a classroom and 25 students in a gym moving in terms of monitoring, you know, where they are, what they're doing. But that was certainly not the sole reason they were looking for the projection.
So we're having $58,175 in capital cost up front, and then I'm assuming just like all technology, we're going to have to rotate this out every...
Well, something like this would probably last us at least 8 to 10 years. Okay. The only thing we have to deal with on an annual basis would be general maintenance.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate for the general maintenance? What do we see at Churchill?
Probably every couple of years we have to replace the lamp, the bulb. Churchill has had theirs in place for 2 years now, and we haven't hit the end of that life cycle on the lamp yet. So
really there's little general maintenance for this?
Correct. Cleaning, that sort of thing, but nothing that would be an expenditure.
And we have all the other parts of the technology, like Xbox and all that, we already have that?
Most of that, and if you know, Karen has purchased some things out of her budget for them.
That's part of they've just received.
I guess maybe this is a better question when the PE is doing it. But if we're going to have these projectors, we're now going to have things that we want to project on that, right? So there's certain, if you have a nutrition unit, going back way back to the last part of the meeting, obviously, but we're going to need to buy those units that help you. We already have them.
No, I mean, like a lot of stuff in our curriculum is like you already have it in that curriculum document, and then you just put that right up there.
Okay.
And like a lot of our pictures describing it, that's in Churchill, has a lot of resources already, like teacher created stuff.
Great. Thanks.
And PTA paid for Churchill's?
Mm hmm.
Did we ask PTA to
to do that? No. I think it was a specific to a Churchill request. I mean, we don't ask PTA. Individual buildings may. And PTA's relationship with the building, they say, what are some things you'd like to see happen and be, you know, what can we contribute to? This was one of them.
Also for Churchill, they're by policy in PTA, you can't hold on to funds year on year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had accrued a certain number of dollars and so had been looking at a couple of different things to do the money with, and so this popped up as a need. So we need to spend that money. Yeah.
Oh, they must have accrued a lot of
money. They did. Well, someone else. Yeah.
Anything else on this?
And again, this started out of finance, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Upcoming meetings. May 28th, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. June 10th, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. June 24th, 2013, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m., Central Services Office. Other matters. Does the board have any other matters it wishes to discuss at this time? Hearing none. Public participation. Are there any members of the public present who wish to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none. The board has determined that it is a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss the following matters: the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on the complaint on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please. Mrs. Stecker.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Chensky?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Galante?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Black.
Yes.